Hello, this is your host, Heidi Marble. As you know, adoption is a global issue. We are so humbled to have adoptees and other parties in the adoption constellation reaching out to share from around the globe. This is a wonderful episode with adoptee Eileen Farida. She was adopted from Iran into a Dutch family. She is just a beautiful, beautiful soul. They did a documentary about her journey, going back to Iran, trying to reclaim her identity and find her family of origin. It is called Finding Farida. If you have not seen it, please watch this documentary. As an adopted person, it affected me deeply. We also shared our love of writing. We shared a few poems back and forth. We also talked about spirituality and how it has helped her navigate the difficulties of adoption and helped her and helping her to have more peace. She is just a sparkle of light in the darkness. Enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pulled by the Root podcast. I am beyond excited. I could barely sleep last night. To have this conversation with Eileen Farida, and I cannot say her name properly, so we are going to get that cleared up. She submitted to me through, I believe it was, our website, and told me her story. She has a documentary. It's just incredible. She's a poet. She is a beautiful spirit. I would like to read her bio to you so you can know a little bit more about her. And she's also agreed to help me pronounce the names in the bio. So here we go. When she was only 1.5 years old, she was adopted by a Dutch family from an infant nursery in Tehran and brought to the Netherlands. She is Iranian Dutch character in the 2018 Iranian documentary film by
Kurush Atae and Azra Musafi.
Thank God you said that. Finding Farida. This film is about search for her biological family, but also for her various identities. The film is going to be represented in Iranian cinema for the Best International Feature Film at the 92nd Academy Awards. In 1976, she was just a few months old when she was left and found at the holy shrine of Imam Reza in Rashad, Iran. The guardian of the shrine found her there and sent her to an infant orphanage in Mashhad. She was named Farida by the caregivers there. After a few months, she was moved to Mashhad to another infant orphanage in Tehran. When she was 16 months old, she was adopted by a Dutch family. She later moved to the Netherlands with them. Her Dutch name, Eileen, she goes now by that name. She heard from her family that she was not their biological child. As she grew older, she notices the differences between herself, her family, and others. After 37 years, she finally decided to go and find her biological family. She published an ad in a local newspaper in the Mashhad called the Karashan Daily. I don't know if I said that right, hopefully. Three families came forward and she decided to go to Iran, visit them and do a DNA test to find her real family. She prepared herself for the long journey to Iran when two Iranian filmmakers called her and suggested to accompany her on the trip and make a documentary film about the story of her journey. The movie has received several awards so far. Amongst the most recent, it was selected as Best Documentary Film at the Herat Women's Festival in 2019 in Kabul. Along the way to the Oscars Academy, the film Finding Farida continues to grow and be successful. Iranian people are waiting to see if it will be able to bring the third Oscar for the Iranian cinema. I think it would be really, really beautiful for you to maybe just give us an update, whatever you can tell us at this point in time about your journey, because I know filming wrapped up probably years ago.
Yes, we recorded Finding Farida. So for the first time, I went back to my motherland, Iran, in 2015. And after that, I went back twice. One time for the edit and one time for the premiere. Afterwards, I've traveled quite a bit I was invited to film festivals in Europe and the United States. So before the Corona time, I could meet the audience of Finding Farida, which was to me, that was really special and a healing journey to actually meet everyone in the cinema and that they could ask me questions about the experience. Yeah, that was incredible to share everything, to share the emotions with each other after the film. People at first, when they walk in, they don't know me. And when they walk out, they hugged me and cried and fell in my arms. So, yeah, that was such a blessing for me also to really do that. And it was due because of also of the fact that the directors, the whole crew is Iranian. So they are all living in Tehran. And they couldn't get out of Tehran for film festivals, or they could only go to the neighbor countries and not go to the US. So I was blessed to be invited to the United States also and go to the Asian World Film Festival in Los Angeles, but also the Academy Award screening and Palm Springs Film Festival, Santa Barbara Film Festival. It was amazing. Yeah, it was really, I felt really blessed.
I, you know, there's so many things, even though we have completely different stories and yours has so many more complexities. I think one of the things I felt so deeply when I was watching your journey, when I found my birth family, they lived in Pennsylvania and I had never been there. And I remember when I crossed into Pennsylvania, something in my body knew that I was home. I can't explain it. Everything felt familiar. And I think most people would think that's really crazy. But there was such a peace when I was there. It was like my body knew where my roots were from. And I found that really fascinating. And I still have that experience every time I go back. And there was nowhere else on the planet that feels the same way. And when you landed, and I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like you might have had a similar experience. Tell me if that's am I making this up?
No, it's true. Yeah, it's a life longing. I longed for it for my whole life to go back, and I've stuck it away, didn't think about it, put it away for years, and then I realized, okay, Iran is really a country. You can go there. There are people living there. And yes, it was magical to me. I didn't know who to take with me to Iran to go back. And that's, I think, I'm single. And I thought, who would be the right person for me to have with me during those vulnerable times also? And who could be the person to accompany me on this journey? And I couldn't really figure that out for years. And when the crew and when the directors asked me to come along, and I thought, oh, this is perfect. You know, Iran is, you know, a different country than the Netherlands. And they know, they speak the language, they know where to go. I felt safe also, which is quite important to allow yourself to be in that moment, to reconnect with, you know, your existence also, and to come that far. And when we landed, of course, you already fly above Iran when you fly there. So that was in the movie as well, when they said, you know, we're now entering the Iranian airspace. So that's thrilling. And then everybody is getting the scars around the heads also, or at least the women. It was very emotional. And, you know, the guard at the airport thought I was Iranian, so he was really confused when I didn't speak Persian. And he was asking me five times, like, who's your dad? What's the name of your dad, you know? And I had to repeat it, and he didn't understand the name, so he was like, okay, well, go on. But that to me is already so satisfying, that somebody's acknowledging me for my Iranian part. And that's something I never really had in my life. Yeah.
Yeah, I see this headline. I have an Iranian heart Dutch mind. Oh my gosh, that spoke to me so heavily, because there was a scene with you, I believe it was on a train, and you were listening to the music, and I can still see your face. It makes me want to cry. Like, I could just see that speaking to every cell in your body. It was like this call back home.
Yes.
And I think that was one, even though it was a subtle scene, there was so much meaning in there for me just to see. It almost felt like it was healing you in real time, like that haunting voice. And
it was, you know, we went from Tehran to Mashhad by train. So, and the train is something, it has some specific feelings with traveling with the train, and then by night, and then, you know, you go to bed. And then you listen to this music, and you know when you wake up, you are that much closer than ever before. So it was quite intense to do that trip. And also to leave Tehran, a buzzing city, and then go to Mashhad, which is actually also the second large city of Iran. But just, you know, the entering Mashhad with the views and the sunlight came, you know, the sun came up, and it was sunrise at that moment, and very early in the morning. But I was so filled with melancholic feelings and with lots of deep feelings by entering the city where I once was abandoned, because I don't know if I'm from that city, but I was left there, And then three families waiting for me there to welcome me, you know, that was amazing. And that was healing. That was so healing for me to be welcomed by three families who thought they were related to me. Yeah.
I know, and I wanted them to be so desperately when you were waiting for the DNA. That was the torturous part. Like, I kept having to remind my heart to beat and for me to take in a deep breath. And I'm just observing. I can't even imagine like being in the middle of that energy and just having your heart just broken and their hearts broken and being in that moment. But just to see the love and compassion and care that you guys were able to share. It was so powerful. Mm.
Yes. Also, I think it's quite special about the film Finding Faraday is that it shows three families that who lost a daughter and a sister, you know, so they get this platform to tell about their story. And for them, it's healing as well to tell their story and their pain and they're missing their whole life. I thought that's really important to show as well, because normally you not often see those stories of them.
No, of you the don't. And I think, what's so powerful about what you're doing, first and foremost, I think you have incredible courage. And the conversations that we're having is that when you have a child that's adopted, these things need to be considered. We are the only human group that doesn't have access to our origin. Mm. We're the only human group where our documents are falsified and it's not a crime. There is a huge human rights issue that underlies all this. And I think your story really can open the eyes of understanding, because I was a domestic adoptee, white, put in a white family, and it was hard. I can't imagine losing my country, my culture, or very physically standing out and being different, because you already feel different when you're adopted. So for me, it's so important for me to understand your experience as best I can, and the other, you know, transracial adoptees that are dealing with all of this. And in addition to this, and then I'll get off my soapbox, but DNA is kind of a privilege. Not everyone, especially in poor countries, has the capacity or the money or to find DNA. I am sure you risked a lot to do this. I don't know if you want to speak about that rant or not.
Well, It's in the core of yourself, you know, being adopted. You always see that you are in the base, you're disrupted, or you come into a family that, you know, that my family, my Dutch family, is super rational and they're not emotional. They couldn't understand me, or they still can't really understand me from the inside. And they can't, they didn't have the openness to find out who I was from the inside also. And my parents, my parents found out that they were pregnant when they adopted me in Iran. And so they were, as I feel, is that they were looking for a sister for their, you know, their child. Because they were having their own child at that time that I got adopted, which was, you know, probably their dream to have a child of their own. So 6 months later, my Dutch brother was born. You're growing up and you see at families that, you know, everybody kind of looks the same in the same family. The children look alike with their dad or mom, and you know, it's you're questioning yourself. You're trying to understand the world around you, and you kind of relate everything to yourself. What's happening? So, what does it mean to a child to be abandoned? It's huge. It's but it goes deep, and you really don't want to share that with your adoptive family at that point, because, yeah, that's you're supposed to be happy because you have a home, you have a family, you have a life there. And it was also a different time, of course, with, you know, with information, with news. It was so small. Everything was so, the world now is connected to each other everywhere. But you know, we didn't have that in the 70s or in the 80s. It was a totally different mindset as well. And I felt really disconnected with my family I grew up with. I think writing has always been my life savior. My grandmother gave me a diary when I was 9 or 10 years old. And from that time, I just went writing. And we had a dog in our family. And the dog was my emotional outlet. I must say that was my emotional. I could sing to the dog. I could, you know, express all my feelings, all my emotions to that one in the family. I was taught, you know, to be quiet all the time, and they didn't know how to. The dog was very important.
This is me. Why I love you so much. I had a very similar experience, and you and I discussed before we press record that we'd like to share a poetry with each other, and I think that'd be so cool for our audience. So who wants to go first?
You go ahead.
Me go ahead. Okay.
Yes.
So I'm going to read two and you can read whatever you like. So okay. This one is called Pulled by the Root. Dirt scatters heavy and clinging, good mud on her feet. Roots a tangled bouquet strangled in her hands. Fighting winters of the soul, dots of sun, speckled light inside of paper leaves. She runs away to and from. Knees thud to the ground. Soil feeds the creases. Tired, just tired. Beneath the frozen, she plants. Remembered by the bloom that opens. Held by a young girl's wish. Shut eyes, sweet breath. She casts her wishes. Float, but she never lands. Anchored in nothing and everything.
Oh, wow.
That's and this beautiful. One is called... This one is called Gravel. I think I wrote this in my 30s and I'm 55 now. Gravel tongue, fidgeting heart twists of hair around her finger. Her words lost in a 360 degree mind. 180 degree choices lead halfway to nowhere. Rusty compass points toward an inner place. Pieces of herself left in circles. Area code, zip code, overload. The highway aches. Hitchhiking through life, the slightest hint of leg, a half-lifted thumb. People borrowed her soul. She traded for transport to anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Well, thank you for letting me share, because I think what feels so wonderful is to be able to share our stories and our hearts and to be heard for who we really are. Like you said, that inner life, to be able to get it out. And it is a vulnerable place, you know, to be. So, and I've read some of your poems. So I'm so excited to see what you're going to share.
It's actually, this is an original in Dutch, but it's translated in English. The reflection of the soul in your expressive eyes. I'm seeing the reflection from my mirror. With a hidden smile, I stare back. With a questioning look, I keep looking, and I'm being watched. Is she the same as I?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you. That was stunning.
One more. I have a small one, and I have, well, anyway, I will read the small one.
You can read as much as you want, because okay. I'm crying.
I'm sorry. Magical words want to come out of my heart, though my mind probably would tell her not to go far. Stepping into the dark and find my way to the light. How beautiful words can be in your mind and just want to come out.
I love that. So hopeful, and, so beautiful.
Okay, and this is, I really like this one. It's a new one. I written this last year. Love is a feeling as the mother kisses her baby goodbye, thinking to never return to her again in order to survive. She whispers prayers to the angels above and wishes they follow her songs in life. Love is a feeling as the father who loves his son at birth, living for the rest of his life without, he sings melodies in the night. He chases the memories in his mind and wishes the tune will protect his son's life. Love is a feeling as the daughter I felt lost without. Spending years in agony, I started to sing my song with a leap of faith. My sound gives me strength and wings to my soul, and I realize it was there all along as the source of life. Love is a feeling in abundance, and it feels like paradise.
Deep breath in. That was so gorgeous. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing. I hope you write a book put all of this in a book, please.
Maybe
in the future. You're done with your documentary. Do this now. Oh,
true.
So I definitely have a couple more things I want to talk to you about too. I think what I really love to know, I was able to get the answers, but there are so many adoptees that never do. How do you cope with living with the questions? Because I think one other thing that stunned me in your documentary was, I won't say what part of it, but you were riding your bike and you realized that it was what you needed was inside of you. Maybe, I don't know if I'm stating that properly, but I just wonder what you can tell people that don't have the answers and may never get them. What kind of, I don't know if encouragement or hope or healing, that's a perspective that, you know, you know so well.
Yeah. Well, you know, just to go back to the name of your website and the name of your podcast, Pulled by the Root. I really love that saying. I really love the name. But it also gave me, or I have a few insights about when I got in touch during my life more and more with my spirituality. And, you know, we adoptees, we don't know our ancestors and our families, birth families, but they are still there, but we don't know them. They're not visible. They're unknown to us at the moment, but they're still there. So to me, it's being spiritual, I can see the whole, the bigger picture of life, and to accept that there's a reason why I got adopted by my Dutch parents. I have to learn certain things from them. And you know, I don't know my birth mother, but I'm sure she's still alive. And I don't know my birth father, but there is someone walking on this earth who was or still is my birth father, only it's not colored. It's not colored in my life. And so, you know, it's true, pulled by the root. But if you look at the bigger picture, we do have our ancestors with us every day, you know. With my spirituality and my I'm growing and I'm meditating every day, and I'm honoring my ancestors and my guardian angels and my spirit animals, you know. They are very important to me, and I get really a lot of strength from them as well. And to me, that was also a bit of homecoming to engage. I met this special lady, I think 12 years ago, as I was looking kind of for a mentor. I never really had like a female mentor in my life, or a female example of who I wanted to become or who I could learn from. And she's she's from my singing female circle, and which is also shown at the end of the movie in Finding Faraday. Sonia, her name is, bless her. And she learned me so much about shamanism and also the view of shamanism and the respect we have. And to me, it's really, I felt really home in that part. My adoptive parents are atheists, and I was already at a young age, I was, I felt the energy of somebody else, and it's almost, it's transforming, and I was intrigued by it. And you know, at that time, we could only go to the library to get books about that subject.
No Google.
Yeah, no, Google existed, you know, the library only. So I got books about spirituality, and I was so intrigued, and my parents were like, "Whoa, it's, you know, it's not their thing, but it's my thing." And yeah, if you look at the bigger picture, we are all, or we're learning a certain lesson during our lives, and I believe that. And it's to me, it's a life savior also to not that there is more than meets the eye. So, you know, due to the new family and your life, and I kind of also questioned everything my parents decided for me in my life. But now I'm independent. I can change. Internally I can change. I did a lot to come to terms with my past. I did NLP. I did a child coach. Therapy, but also and regression therapy, because I really wanted to go back to 1 year, 6 months and 3 months, because I really wanted to know what the time for me was like in Iran, and what I felt. So I went through all the pain and all my anxieties as well, and kind of shaped myself the way I wanted to be. And and that's the biggest gift I can give to myself, is to heal my soul and to eventually really be happy with everything. And honoring my birth mother and father, you know, in my heart and my body and in my voice, in everything I do, I send them messages all the time. I don't know if they get it, but you know, I feel connected to them. I mean, I'm part of them, you know. It's and time will tell. Time will tell I'm happy either way. So whatever happens. But I will not put my luck into it if it doesn't happen at all, you know. I love self. So
wow, there's so many good points.
I came from
so many.
I came a long way.
Oh my goodness. It's really, really interesting. You know, you're talking about spirituality, and that is something that's also very important to me. And I was given the spirit animal of a ram. And I'm like, ooh, what does that mean? Like the big horns, and, you know, but it's also really powerful.
Oh, a ram. Okay.
Yeah. A ram. What were yours? Do you mind sharing? What are your spirit animals?
Mine is the white swan.
Oh,
the white swan.
Yeah, this makes complete sense now. I'm a ram and you're a swan. Well, and not to make light of it, but I think that discovering the spirituality, being able to find that and being able to connect with that. And I think when you read your poem about looking at your face and realizing that we are not exclusively ours. We are standing on the shoulders of our ancestors, and they're rising up through us, no matter if we know them or not. I think that's such a comforting thing for adoptees to think about that may not have the answers, and to know that it's integrated into us. And the other thing I hear you saying that I've been hearing all week is acceptance. See, a lot of us are caught in resistance.
Yeah.
What we want, what we deserve, what we should have had, and all of those are justifiable. But the problem with that is it makes our life really small and it keeps us in pain. And I think that it's such a great example for you to say, I've done the hard work and I'll have to continue doing it to heal.
Yeah.
And I think that is certainly inspiring to me. And thank you so much for sharing that. That was amazing. Absolutely amazing. So as we start to wrap things up, is there anything else you want to say to what we're trying to do at Pulled by the Root is have a roundtable conversation where it's not just exclusive to adoptees. We want people, this is a global issue. We want people to understand. So what would you say if you knew you had the ears of a very large audience? What would you want them to know about adoption that they may not know?
Ooh.
I know, because I feel that a lot of people think it's just a pretty picture. They're really not understanding the trauma that exists. And so,
they need to understand that the trauma at an early age is happening, although the child, of course, can't say anything about it at the moment. So the child will be hopefully a happy child in the family, but still there is so much to address: the birth country, the culture, the missing of the birth mother. You know, adoptees adapt to, or and they don't want to be rejected anymore. So they might not tell the real things going on inside of them. I did a course for 1 year to do adoption coach because I like to help other adoptees with their struggles. But you can only start healing is when you are an adult. If you come out of your family system, you know, and have a look at yourself with your own eyes. And I feel that's quite misunderstood. I think we are, as adoptees, it's like this pink story from, you know, the 70s, the 60s, 70s, and the 80s. Like, we want to help a child, but do know it's a traumatized child, and do know around 16, 17, because I really missed in my life, I really missed someone I could confide in other than my family.
And your dog.
So, luckily I had a dog, you know, but many of adoptees might not have a dog or to come out of your pain. I think it should be in healthcare. There should be a special package for adoptees and not for, you know, only a certain time of age. For adoptees, it's their decision when they want to heal themselves, either through having a child of their own or a breakup or what, whenever. It's in their life, each individual has their own process, their own tempo in it. And I think it should really be handled with a lot of care and also with a lot of trust and safety and connection for them. But free healthcare for adoptees.
Yeah, really, really difficult for adoptees. You know, the statistics are not in our favor when it comes to all of this.
I know,
This has been such a joyful time with you. Thank you so much. I hope we can meet again and we can talk more.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Heidi.
Yes, and for opening up your life in the way that you did by being filmed. And I think it's just having a global impact. And I just feel so honored that I have the chance to know you. And thank you for helping me pronounce everything.
Thank you so much for Pulled by the Root podcast and for you. It's an important mission and I totally support you.